Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
If you're like me and suffer from insomnia, you know what? That's not fun. You know, I tried everything. I couldn't get a good night's sleep. And this is neither drug nor alcohol induced. That's right. It is MyPillow. Mike Lindell invented it, and he fitted me for my first MyPillow, and it's changed my life. I fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer, and the good news, you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code Sean, and take advantage of one of Mike Lindell's best offers, his special four-pack. You get 50% off two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, no risk to you, and a 10-year warranty. You don't want to spend more sleepless nights on a pillow tossing and turning that's not working for you. Just go to MyPillow.com right now. Use the promo code Sean, and you get Mike Lindell's special four-pack. You get two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows, 50% off, and you'll start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep you've been craving and deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Sean. All right, glad you're with us. Happy Friday. If you thought this was going to be a slow news day, buckle up. It is getting more fascinating minute by minute by minute. Just moments ago, the Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Justice released a report of investigation of the certain allegations related to the former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. We're sifting through that even as we speak. But the conclusion is we concluded that McCabe's decision to confirm the existence of the Clinton Foundation investigation through an anonymously sourced quote. This was in the Wall Street Journal. It's like 40 pages. It goes deep. It does a deep dive into this, recounting the content of a phone call with a senior department official in a manner designed to advance his personal interests at the expense of department leadership was clearly not within the public interest exception. And it just a huge, huge disparity in terms of what recollections were between McCabe and Comey. So we'll get into all of that today. Rod Rosenstein is now running around telling people he expects to get fired any minute. And he's telling confidants that he expects that. Now, who would leak that but Rod Rosenstein himself? Anyway, in conversations that he's quoted with friends, he's saying, "Here I stand," a reference to Martin Luther King's famous quote, "Here I stand, I can do no other." And coincidentally, the former FBI director, James Comey, who Rosenstein fired, repeated the same phrase to George W. Bush in a conversation that has been widely reported and that Comey describes in his book that is released Monday. We have a lot more information on that book. One source who spoke to Rosenstein said he seemed fully aware that he may soon lose his job and he's at peace with the possibility, confident he had done his job with integrity. And that history will prove he did the right thing by firing Comey in May of 2017. We're beginning to put that together very quickly, claiming that the American people do not have all the facts about what led to his decision to write the memo that led to Comey's dismissal, the source said. And if Rosenstein is fired next, well, the next in line to oversee the Mueller probe would be the Solicitor General, Noel Francisco, though Trump could choose to replace Rosenstein with anyone who's been confirmed by the Senate. Now, Trump tweeted this morning that Rosenstein was perhaps more conflicted than Mueller because he signed a FISA and Comey letter. That's all true. We've been pointing it out. Alan Dershowitz has been out there, you know, saying the exact same thing, that he should have recused himself because he's witness number one in a lot of this investigation. Why did you fire Comey? Why did you write the letter to fire Comey? And on top of that, he appointed Robert Mueller and he's conflicted out 100 different ways and sideways. Anyway, there's reports in some of the news today that Rosenstein consulted with ethics advisors over the course of the investigation on the issue of whether he should recuse himself. Well, he should have recused himself. You know, how could you be the person that renews the FISA warrant using the phony, unpaid, uncorroborated, unverified dossier? And maybe twice he did it, at least once we know he did it. How can you be that guy? And then how can you be the guy that puts Mueller in place? You can't. That's a conflict. I mean, especially if we're using the Jeff Sessions standard, which frankly became borderline ridiculous and everything. Anyway, so happy you're with us. Also, other news today, Scooter Libby has been given a pardon by the President of the United States. Today, Donald Trump issued an executive grant of clemency, full pardon to Scooter Lewis Libby, former chief of staff to Vice President Dick Cheney, for convictions stemming from a 2007 trial. And if you remember, the sentence was commuted by President George W. Bush after the conviction. He still had to pay a $250,000 fine, 400 hours of community service, 2 years probation. And I think a lot of people looking at this as exact same situation we always find ourselves in when it relates to special counsels, the overreach. Now, in that case, the special counsel prosecutor was a guy by the name of Patrick Fitzgerald. And Patrick Fitzgerald, you know, remember there was he was appointed to find out who, in fact, had leaked information about Valerie Plame, who was not a covert operative in the CIA, but that became the media narrative in all of this. And on almost the first or second day that he took over that office, he discovered who the leaker was. And the leaker wasn't Scooter Libby. And this went on for 3 long years, and it never ends. And it ends with Scooter Libby, basically, like so often is the case, you know, he gets charged for lying to the FBI. Well, if you start talking to these prosecutors and you don't remember something, right, even, you know, Alan Dershowitz said something to me the other night that kind of scared me. He goes, even if you tell the truth, but they don't believe your version of the truth versus somebody else's version of the truth, you can still be charged with lying to the FBI. I mean, it's absolute insanity. So it's like Martha Stewart. I actually saw Martha Stewart yesterday, and I said, you know, what you went through was so fundamentally wrong and unfair. She goes, tell me about it. And then she was extraordinarily strong and stoic. Remember, they had this issue about whether or not she had been tipped off on a stock. They couldn't prove that crime. Then they said, well, you lied to the FBI. This happens all the time. The same with General Flynn. I mean, my FBI friends have told me, we've had conversations about this. So you're telling me that even if you're inclined to want to help the FBI because you admire the FBI, I've always looked up to the FBI. I've always looked up. They're the best of the best. Like, I had a lot of people in my family that were in law enforcement, you know, from my mom being a prison guard to, you know, cousins and relatives all over the place being in the New York Police Department. But the highest echelon was my cousins that got into the FBI and the work that they did. That was like the greatest law enforcement achievement anybody could make. And that's how I grew up. So I talked to these friends of mine in the FBI, and I'll ask the question. I'll say, somebody that wants to help the FBI, that you're saying to me you shouldn't talk to them because you could always be held for lying to the FBI if you misremember something, or something's not 100% right, or they can prove that that wasn't an accurate statement, but you didn't mean to say something that was inaccurate. And they say, absolutely. I mean, that's a form of insanity. You know, Denny Hastert, who was ever paying off, you know, this family because he had molested some kids in Chicago when he was a coach years ago, they couldn't get him on that crime, but they got him on lying to the FBI. It's like a go-to that they fall into. Anyway, but Patrick Fitzgerald, this went on for 3 long years. And my understanding, having spoken with many people about this, it came down to this. Well, he's the chief of staff to the vice president at the time, Dick Cheney. And Patrick Fitzgerald at the time wanted information on Cheney. He wanted the bigger target, the bigger prize. And Scooter Libby wasn't giving it to him. And then he gets convicted. And then, remember, this started in 2005 in his life. Well, now it's 2018 before he gets his pardon. Well, there goes, you know, a big chunk of your adult life. It's a form of madness that has happened here. This is what Alan Dershowitz is referring to about criminalizing now political differences, because that's what's in play here. All right, now, before I get to this Inspector General report, we've got to go to James Comey and this book tour of his. And there's so much here that it actually takes my breath away. Let me play a little bit about him talking about the Steele dossier still being unverified when he was fired, and he didn't tell Trump that he financed it. And at another point, he actually goes even further. And he says, I to this day don't know if it's true. And the importance of what I'm about to play you is simple, is that the dossier was bought and paid for by Hillary. They didn't tell it to the FISA court. The FISA law requires verification and corroboration of materials that you're going to present to a judge. After all, the judge is going to sign off if you get the warrant on spying on an American citizen, in this case, a member of the opposition party campaign in the lead up to an election. And that gives them a backdoor access into all things Trump campaign at that point, and then Trump president-elect at that point, and then Trump president at that point. And if he doesn't know to this day that it's verified and that it's true, how could he justify the Justice Department presenting this to a FISA judge? This never made sense. And then omitting not only to Donald Trump in January of 2017, when they already used it as the bulk of the information to get the warrant in October of 2016, then Comey, you know, to this day doesn't know if it's true. And they're omitting all of this information to the FISA court judge. That's lying to a judge. I don't think anybody in this audience would ever dare do that without thinking they're going to jail for the rest of their lives. Cut two.
Was there any choice there? Why, if this was salacious and this particular part of the dossier unverified, still unverified, by the way?
Yes. So far as when I got fired, it was unverified.
Did you tell him that the Steele dossier had been financed by his political opponents?
No, I didn't even think I used the term Steele dossier. I just talked about additional material.
But did he have a right to know that?
That had been financed by his political opponents? I don't know the answer to that. It wasn't necessary for my goal, which was to alert him that we had this information.
Oh, to alert him. Okay, that you had the information. You don't think it's relevant to tell the president-elect where the information was coming from? And then he makes a big, big deal over the fact that the president says, hey, listen, I don't want my wife believing this crap about me. Even if there's 1% of her that believes it, can't we prove it's not true? Well, that seems like a reasonable request. You know, and Comey said, well, I never said I didn't believe the hookers urinating on a bed story and the Trump meeting was weird. And then he goes on to describe, you know, the president and his face being orange and the size of his hands. It is the most bizarre book I've ever seen. And I can tell you now, having spoken with a number of people that read it, there's nothing in it that is of any real substance, because he didn't see the president a whole lot. He builds up those few experiences into something that it's not. So listen to him. I never said I didn't believe the P-tape story.
How graphic did you get?
I think as graphic as I needed to be. I started to tell him about the allegation was that he had been involved with prostitutes in a hotel in Moscow in 2013 during a visit for the Miss Universe pageant, and that the Russians had filmed the episode. And he interrupted very defensively and started talking about it. You know, do I look like a guy who needs hookers? And I assumed he was asking that rhetorically. I didn't answer that, and then I just moved on and explained, sir, I'm not saying that we credit this. I'm not saying we believe it. We just thought it very important that you know.
Did you tell him you thought it wasn't true, or you didn't know if it was true or not?
I never said I don't believe it, because I couldn't say one way or another.
How weird was that briefing?
Really weird. It was almost an out-of-body experience for me. I was floating above myself, looking down, saying, you're sitting here briefing the incoming president of the United States about prostitutes in Moscow.
Why didn't you try and verify it later? He says he never knew if he doesn't know to this day if it's true. But it was still used to obtain a FISA warrant. This is insanity. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. We'll get your calls in throughout the day. We've got our full team of analysts, including Newt Gingrich, Sarah Carter, David Schoen, my friend Greg Jarrett, all coming up here. Look, every time I think I've run out of reasons why we need the Convention of States, there's always a new one. You know, now we've got, okay, out of control, big government, even raiding the home and offices of the president's personal attorney. Now, I want to play this next cut here. This is Comey, again, part of this interview that'll air Sunday, I guess, on ABC. And Comey, well, Trump wanted me to investigate. Now, he just got done telling the president that the salacious, unverified dossier exists. Didn't tell him it was Hillary bought and paid for. Didn't tell him that it was used as a basis for a FISA warrant. Now, if you're hearing this for the first time in your life about hookers urinating in a bed, and the president's like, can you just investigate that and find out who paid for the lies? Comey knew who paid for it. And Comey knew it was used as a basis for a FISA warrant. All right, listen to cut four here.
January 27th, at a private dinner in the White House, President Trump raises the issue again.
Says he may want me to investigate it to prove that it didn't happen. And then he says something that distracted me, because he said, you know, if there's even a 1% chance my wife thinks that's true, that's terrible. And I remember thinking, how could your wife think there's a 1% chance you were with prostitutes peeing on each other in Moscow? I'm a flawed human being, but there's literally zero chance that my wife would think that was true. So what kind of marriage to what kind of man does your wife think there's only a 99% chance you didn't do that? And I said to him, sir, when he started talking about it, I may order you to investigate that. I said, sir, that's up to you, but you'd want to be careful about that, because it might create a narrative that we're investigating you personally. And second, it's very difficult to prove something didn't happen.
Did you believe his denial?
Honestly, never thought these words would come out of my mouth, but I don't know whether the current president of the United States was with prostitutes peeing on each other in Moscow in 2013. It's possible.
Think how damning that is for James Comey in light of what we now know. And we know, again, the Nunes memo. We know the Grassley Graham memo. I'll quote the Grassley Graham memo. The bulk of information came from the dossier, and here it is all this time later. James Comey is, I have no idea if it's true or not. Then how do you get to present that to a FISA judge to get a warrant to spy in the weeks leading up to an election, paid for, he knew, by Hillary Clinton and her campaign in the DNC, and you use it as the basis to get a warrant to spy on an opposition party candidate associate in the lead up to an election, and you still don't know it's true when the law requires that you do verify and that you do corroborate, and FBI protocol says the same. It should take your breath away, the magnitude and the abuse of power here. It is unbelievable. We'll continue. All right, it looks like the first leaking from the raid of Michael Cohen's offices now come out. Wall Street Journal and Washington Post have it. Headline, Washington Post, Trump lawyer negotiated $1.6 million settlement for GOP donor with a Playboy model. I'm reading the article here. I'm trying to say, okay, what does that have anything to do with the fact this was in late 2017, and apparently some donor, finance guy that worked with the RNC, had this affair. The woman got pregnant. They negotiated a settlement. What does that have to do with anything? And where could that information possibly have come from other than those that went in and raided the offices of Michael Cohen? Where did that leak come from, especially in light of the Office of Inspector General report today? You know, where's this information coming from? That should be another question. We need another investigation, an investigation after the investigation into the investigation of the investigation. You can't even make this stuff up. Anyway, what really stands out when you, as I'm reading all these excerpts, because I don't have the book completely yet, talk to people that have, and everything that I'm reading and seeing in the interview with George Stephanopoulos, the amount of pettiness, arrogance, even mean-spiritedness, political, you know, embittered former employee is the only way I can describe what James Comey is doing here. On top of that, it is just breathtakingly stupid for somebody that is in the position he is in, meaning potential legal jeopardy in terms of fixing an investigation, obstructing justice was what it would be called as it relates to Hillary Clinton and the email server scandal. Taking privileged information, leaking it for the sake of securing a special counsel, and, you know, other issues involving James Comey. I don't think I would be writing a book and running around the country telling everybody I'm great and I am the, you know, the epitome of all things righteous and good. And Donald Trump looked like he went to a tanning bed and his hands weren't as big as mine, because that's what's in the book. Anyway, he admits in this book that if you know, that part of his decision as it relates to the new information. Remember, they didn't do this. They had the information about Anthony Weiner's laptop a month before they revealed it. I think it was actually 5 weeks before they revealed it. And his belief was, well, Hillary is going to win anyway. And I just want to make sure that she is, when she's elected, she's going to be legitimate. His quote is, it's entirely possible because I was making decisions in an environment where Hillary Clinton was sure to be the next president. My concern about making her an illegitimate president by concealing the emails is what he's talking about on the Weiner laptop and restarting the investigation bore greater weight than it would have if the election appeared closer or if Donald Trump were ahead in all the polls. So he did it to help make Hillary legitimate and then basically thinking it's not going to impact the election. This election is over. Well, he's politicizing and admitting that he's politicizing his entire office and job. That shouldn't have been a concern of his at all. The concern is right, wrong, the public right, public's right to know. And especially as it relates to the email server scandal, remember, he was writing the exoneration in May. They didn't interview her or 17 other key witnesses until July. The guy that did the interviews, Peter Strzok, who hates President Trump. And 2 days later, they exonerate her after basically admitting everything that we knew was true as it relates to the email server scandal, that there was classified top secret special access programming on it, that it was put in a mom and pop shop server where it didn't belong. A violation of 18 U.S.C. 793, that she deleted subpoenaed emails, that she destroyed her hard drive, and that she broke up her devices. And the only device she handed over didn't have a SIM card in it. So he's admitting in his book that, well, if Trump had been ahead in the polls, well, he would have considered covering up the Weiner laptop scandal. But the only reason he wanted to do it was because there was no way she was going to lose. And Democrats, including Hillary herself, they're blaming Comey's October surprise announcement for the White House. Comey's making it clear he revealed it because he believed the polls showed that the election was a fait accompli in the bag for her. So he was so sure she was going to win that she could withstand what he was going to release to the public. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't have done it. And one of the lies that, you know, the book I've been yet to hear any fake news media challenge is his claim that he reopened this email case 11 days before because he's afraid if he didn't, you know, and after it, that was a political choice, probably, I would assume here, for his own future. He wanted to be in her good graces. Why would I think that? Because in the Strzok Page memos, besides talking about insurance policies and hating Trump, well, they were talking about Hillary being president and didn't want to be in her bad graces either. So if he thought he could have gotten away with it, he would have kept these emails about that were discovered on Weiner's laptop well after the election because they had it 5 weeks earlier. Andrew McCabe, by the way, had already been sitting on this email bombshell for those number of weeks. So that means Comey had to know about all of these things. You know, I mean, the more I dig into this, the more I cannot believe this is all happening in our country. I just can't believe this is where we are and all of this is happening. President Trump's first request was to confirm that it had no impact on the election. Well, what's wrong with that question when he was told that the Russians had, in fact, influenced the or tried to influence the election? Now, my question is to Jim Comey. He was the FBI director at the time. Devin Nunes had warned everybody in a column that he wrote for The Washington Times saying that the Russians had done it before. They'll try and do it again. And that is create chaos and influence the election. Well, by the way, Chris Wallace actually said, I can't believe that Comey comes off that bitchy in the report. What does that mean? Oh, my gosh. Anyway, so if the president wanted to confirm that it had no impact, that's a good thing to know because the American people need to know and have faith in their electoral process. It's unbelievable. So Comey to this day doesn't even know, doesn't have a clue about whether or not what was in the dossier is true. Now, one other interesting side note here, and I don't know how to interpret this. Comey writes that he felt obligated to take more of a personal role as the public face of the investigation rather than deferring to the Attorney General Loretta Lynch. He says in part because of something involving Lynch that he's cryptically referring to as a, quote, development still unknown to the American public to this day. Now, I thought it was because, you know, it wasn't a good idea for the attorney general to meet with the husband of the guy she was about to make a decision over whether or not they're going to prosecute as it relates to the email server scandal. People always say, well, why do you keep talking about Clinton? She's not the president. Because of the massive double standard here as it relates to the application of the laws in this country and equal justice under the law in this country. But he's writing this cryptically referring to developments still unknown to the American public to this day. And in early 2016, the U.S. government became aware of information from a classified source, he says. The source and the content of that material remains classified as I write this. Had it become public, the unverified material would undoubtedly have been used by political opponents to cast serious doubt on the attorney general's independence in connection with the Clinton investigation. So what he's saying is there's something way beyond even the meeting on the tarmac in Arizona between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch. Unbelievable. Then you've got, of course, the next step after he referred to the president as a mob boss, which I took offense to, which is why I said, okay, if we're going to use the Comey standard, we'll go with the same analogy. I never wanted Don Jr. in this business. I told him, Don, this business, Michael, this is not for you. I said, Don, this is more for Sonny and Fredo. Fredo's not so smart. But anyway, so part of this is, I don't know why you people keep making me do that. Donald Trump engaged in a months-long effort to secure the, quote, loyalty of the FBI director. Anyway, so he's had very little interaction with the president, but every time he does, he blows it up into the biggest thing in the entire world. He likens it to a mafia boss. Then we find out it's really about, you know, Sammy the Bull Gravano, a guy that murdered 19 people. So I'm like, if that's the Comey standard, all right, we'll use the Comey standard on him. We'll use the Comey standard on Clinton and Mueller. And Mueller's team of Democratic donors and the most unethical people you could ever appoint to a special counsel. Anyway, Comey writes that the demand was like Sammy the Bull's Cosa Nostra induction ceremony, referring to Gravano, a former leader of the Gambino crime family. Well, the guy took 19 lives, but it was his testimony that helped convict John Gotti at the time. And Comey responded with silence, he writes in the book. Later in the dinner, Trump said, I need loyalty. You always get honesty from me, sir. That's what I want, honest loyalty. I sat there thinking, holy crap, they're trying to make each of us amica nostra, friend of ours, to draw us in, Comey says. As crazy as it sounds, I suddenly had the feeling that in the blink of an eye, the president-elect was trying to make us all part of the same family and the Team Trump. Had made it a thing of ours. Now, the book is sharply critical of the president. You know, Comey, you know, who tried to compare him to mob people, but Comey writes, I have one perspective on the behavior I saw, which while disturbing and violating basic norms of ethical leadership, may fall short of being illegal. You guys paying attention to this? So Comey doesn't think anything illegal happened. Now, he doesn't clear the president of anything as it relates to wrongdoing, but if Comey had it, it'd be in the book. He doesn't have it. And the book basically doesn't really, just all it does is give a little more color and flair to the same testimony that he gave way back when. Even with relation to, you know, the other time that he had an interaction with the president, and, you know, the president said, oh, about Michael Flynn, I hope he's a good guy. I hope you can let this go. That's not saying let it go. I demand you to let it go. It's saying, oh, the guy served his country 35 years. I hope this isn't a big deal. I hope this ends well. I hope it's not a problem. Why wouldn't he say that? Who would want a 35-year veteran to end up with criminal charges for crying out loud? I did not interrupt the president to protest that what he was asking was inappropriate. I probably should have. You know what? He always, this is the thing about this book, he tries to make himself out to be the best. Talks about how Obama praised him later in the book And, oh, and John Kelly offered to resign over the firing. I'm not sure I even believe that. No idea whether or not anything in the dossier is true. No idea if that bed was soiled in Moscow. And then the psychological news, what is happening now is not normal. It's not fake news. It's not okay. Well, and then he admits that his wife and daughter voted for Hillary and marched in the women's march. You know, it's, you know, at what point is this mess here going to end? It just seems to be no end to this. You know, where's the evidence in a case like this? Of Reince Priebus, he says he seemed both confused and irritated. Hillary Clinton, through the email investigation and the 2016 election looming large, he writes that he would never met Clinton and offers no assessment of her. But he loves Barack Obama. Loved James Clapper, the leader I admired most in government. Didn't James Clapper lie to Congress? Why didn't he get in trouble? Now, the president rightly points out that, well, he's told a lot of lies in his day. And, you know, remember, the Democrats hated Jim Comey, absolutely despised him. And, you know, he's the guy that said, I've never leaked. Under oath, he said he never leaked. Well, he did leak. He leaked that information to the Columbia professor. So he lied to Congress. All stuff that would get, you know, Leona Helmsley, only the little people pay tax. Only the rest of us are subject to the laws of the land. That's where we now are with these guys. You know, he always tells the truth. You know, and even he said the president had a right to fire him. And by the way, I think it was now in retrospect, probably the best thing the president has ever done. You know, he wants to say he's like this Boy Scout figure. You know, only he has a connection to truth and reality. Democrats hated him. Remember, Hillary Clinton, he bowed to partisan pressure. Nancy Pelosi called him a political hack who threw Molotov cocktails that politically damaged Democrats. Chris Saliza said Comey is a typical Washington insider. And all of these people hated him. Harry Reid says he needs to be fired. Well, he gets fired. And now the Democrats hated him, but now they like him. Unbelievable times. All right, as we roll along. All right, we'll check in with Newt Gingrich. President just tweeted out, DOJ just issued the McCabe report, which is a total disaster, which we're going over now. He lied, lied, lied. McCabe was totally controlled by Comey. McCabe is Comey. No collusion. All made up by this den of thieves and lowlives. Ouch. And I was reminded by a friend on Twitter that when McCabe was fired, Comey tweeted out, oh, he stood tall for the last 8 months. Okay, that's
President-elect Trump's first question was to confirm that it had no impact on the election. And then the conversation, to my surprise, moved into a PR conversation about how the Trump team would position this and what they could say about this. They actually started talking about drafting a press release with us still sitting there. And the reason that was so striking to me is that that's just not done. That the intelligence community does intelligence, the White House does PR and spin.
You also said you were struck by what they didn't ask.
Very much. No one, to my recollection, asked, so what's coming next from the Russians? How might we stop it? What's the future look like? It was all, what can we say about what they did and how it affects the election that we just had?
Was there any choice there? Why, if this was salacious, and this particular part of the dossier unverified, still unverified, by the way?
Yes. So far as when I got fired, it was unverified.
Did you tell him that the Steele dossier had been financed by his political opponents?
No, I didn't. I didn't even think I used the term Steele dossier. I just talked about additional material.
Did he have a right to know that?
That it had been financed by his political opponents? I don't know the answer to that. It wasn't necessary for my goal, which was to alert him that we had this information.
How graphic did you get?
I think as graphic as I needed to be. I started to tell him about the allegation was that he had been involved with prostitutes in a hotel in Moscow in 2013 during a visit for the Miss Universe pageant, and that the Russians had filmed the episode. And he interrupted very defensively and started talking about it. You know, do I look like a guy who needs hookers? And I assumed he was asking that rhetorically. I didn't answer that, and then I just moved on and explained, sir, I'm not saying that we credit this, I'm not saying we believe it. We just thought it very important that you know.
Did you tell him you thought it wasn't true, or you didn't know if it was true or not?
I never said I don't believe it, because I couldn't say one way or another.
How weird was that briefing?
Really weird. It was almost an out-of-body experience for me. I was floating above myself, looking down, saying, you're sitting here briefing the incoming president of the United States about prostitutes in Moscow.
January 27th, at a private dinner in the White House, President Trump raises the issue again.
Says he may want me to investigate it to prove that it didn't happen. And then he says something that distracted me, because he said, you know, if there's even a 1% chance my wife thinks that's true, that's terrible. And I remember thinking, how could your wife think there's a 1% chance you were with prostitutes peeing on each other in Moscow? I'm a flawed human being, but there's literally zero chance that my wife would think that was true. So what kind of marriage to what kind of man does your wife think there's only a 99% chance you didn't do that?
All right, that's from the James Comey interview set to air on Sunday night on ABC. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Comey was struck that Trump's people weren't more concerned about the future Russian involvement. It was all about PR. But the FBI and Obama were warned by Devin Nunes in 2014. So this idea that they didn't know and all of a sudden this is all fresh and new to them, that is not true. And Comey obsessed with the Steele dossier. It's still unverified. Then why was it used as the bulk of information for a FISA warrant and presented before a FISA court? And why didn't he tell the FISA judge that, in fact, Hillary bought and paid for this information, a foreign national using Russian sources, and that it was never verified as the law requires or that FBI protocol requires? And the last point there, I never said I didn't believe the hookers urinating on a bed story. It's just really this is what I've never seen anything this petty. All right, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. If you want to be a part of the program, joining us now, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. I don't know the extent to which you're following this interview and book as we now do our deep dive into it. He is the single, I can't believe this guy was ever the FBI director in terms of the pettiness of everything that he's talking about and discussing in this book, and the way, you know, talking about the president, you know, suntanning and the size of his hands and everything else. This is the FBI director, sir.
First of all, I like Chris Wallace's comment that it was so bitchy he didn't want to pay any attention to it.
It's true.
Not mine. But I think you missed the greatest irony of this entire interview.
Mm-hmm.
Remember who's doing the interviewing. This is Bill Clinton's press secretary.
Yeah.
Now, if you wanted to have somebody who was totally appropriate to raise questions about relations with females, et cetera, who could be better than Bill Clinton's press secretary?
I can't deny any of that.
To be a neutral newsman.
You know, the idea that we're at this point, here's the most damning thing in my mind, is we now know, even though Rod Rosenstein, the DOJ, the FBI have been stonewalling in terms of handing over documents, we now know that the FISA court application, they lied to the judges. They never verified and corroborated what was in this dossier, this foreign national put together that Hillary paid for. And not only that, they didn't inform the judges that, in fact, it was not just a footnote, it may have political implications. She paid for it. They knew she paid for it. So to me, he's actually damned himself in this interview.
Well, Comey has spent so much time damning himself. I really like the Republican National Committee put together a new site called LionComey.com, and they have on there the video of, I think, 8 or 9 different Democratic leaders all condemning Comey in the most fierce language. And you look at that, and you think, if every American saw that segment, they'd immediately understand this is a guy who is totally self-absorbed. He is deeply offended that he was fired. He is going to get even. And he is throwing the kitchen sink. And it tells you how sick, I think it tells you how sick the system is, that this was the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I mean, this is the most petty, mean-spirited, dishonest person to show up like this. It's astonishing.
It literally shatters.
I predict that the longer he's interviewed, the weaker he's going to look, and the more people are going to shrug him off as kind of pathetic.
I think that's all happening, and there is no real big bombshell in the book that anybody has really gleaned from this thing yet. Although, I think nothing that at least advances his cause, which was always, it seems, to get Donald Trump, and he doesn't even really try to hide his utter contempt for the president. I mean, that takes my breath away.
Well, one of his lines was that Trump was sort of sitting on the throne. I reread it three times to realize he's sitting behind the presidential desk in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
Now, I've been in the Oval Office with a lot of different presidents, and I've had a number of them sit behind the desk. It never occurred to me that was a throne. But it tells you something about Comey's personal inadequacies, that he has this deep sense of, you know, there's a piece I saw earlier today that he had gone to see Obama, and he just wanted to ask Obama, would he really do all right? And you read this quote from his being in with Obama, and you think, this is like a seventh grader seeking approval. And, of course, he didn't want approval from Trump. He didn't like Trump. He didn't want Trump to be there. He did everything he could. There's no doubt in my mind that the FBI knowingly didn't tell the federal judge this was a Clinton campaign document because they wanted to get the FISA warrant, because they wanted to get somebody in the Trump team, because they wanted to set the stage for exactly what we're going through. And I think the whole thing is tainted. And there I have to say, by the way, you've done great work with Alan Dershowitz on these things. And as an old-time liberal, Dershowitz, who's a great college professor at Harvard, has really come on strong in explaining just how sick this whole system is now.
Here's what happened, Mr. Speaker. Here's what we know. And I bring this up every time because the magnitude of this, I think people really need to just take this in and absorb this. We have the former head of the DNC said Hillary, the DNC rigged the primary. She stole the primary from Bernie Sanders. This is the United States. Then we have a situation where we know Hillary committed multiple felonies, crimes, you know, and then, of course, the obstruction aspect of deleting and acid washing and breaking up devices. Then we have Comey exonerating Hillary Clinton, writing an exoneration months before. He even investigates her or 17 other people. The person that does the interview of Hillary Clinton is Peter Strzok, the big Trump hater himself, in conjunction with Comey. And then they don't tell the FISA court judge this is a political paid document that we didn't verify or corroborate in any way, because he even admits in this interview and in this book that he still has not corroborated anything in that dossier. But yet that dossier was the bulk of information to get a FISA warrant to spy on an American who happened to be part of the opposition party campaign. This is the United States, sir.
He's alluded to some reference that there's a classified document that indicates that Attorney General Loretta Lynch was doing things that were illegal. I mean, you know, every time you dig into this, it just gets worse. But what I must ask you to remember is this isn't a silly game. This was the head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. These are people with the power to put you in jail. These are people who make your life miserable. And if they don't follow carefully the rule of law, they threaten all of us. Because think about it. If they will do this to the President of the United States, what will they do to you and me? What will they do to every listener in the country? And I think that's why Thomas Jefferson insisted on the Bill of Rights being added to the Constitution, because he so deeply distrusted government power. And what you're seeing are people who are just breaking down the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and willfully pursuing political vendettas in a way that I don't think we've ever seen in American history.
All right. When we come back with Speaker Gingrich, we are going to go over some of the lies that we know James Comey is telling and what it may mean for his future. Don't forget, by the way, Newt Gingrich, you can still sign up for your course, right?
Oh, yeah. It's still available, defendingdemocracycourse.com. And it relates to exactly this. There's a whole section on the Bill of Rights and on the rule of law and why it's so important. And I did the course in order to have young people who don't get this education anymore, to have them learn about what America is all about.
These are very strange times we live in. Former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, with us.
Well, you're exactly right. I don't think we've ever seen the level of intensity. Frankly, I'm not sure how many Democrats really like James Comey. He's not a very likable guy. And I think that, what we're seeing, and I'm interested to watch this coming week, is I think he's the kind of personality that doesn't wear very well. You know, he's like the brother-in-law that you don't mind have come over like for a cup of coffee. You don't particularly want him to stay for dinner.
Yeah.
And I just think, I'm not telling anybody in particular. But anyhow, I think he's the kind of guy who, the more you listen to him talk, the more you realize that his world is about James Cohen. You know, everything's about him. And, of course, what Donald Trump did was he fired him. And so what you've got is an embittered former employee who was fired, who is now doing everything he can to dump on the guy who fired him. And I think in the end, Trump's going to come out just fine. People are going to say, yeah.
Look at the lies, though.
Given this guy's ego, I'd have fired him, too.
You know, he says he never leaked. We know he leaked to the Columbia professor to the New York Times, right? You know, he claims he was wrongly fired. But the truth is, he did a lot of things that he shouldn't have done. And every Democrat didn't want him in that position. All those Democrats. You know, he says he's not political. It's obvious he's political. So everything that he's saying here is just absolutely false. And yet in all of this book, I don't see anything. The idea that Donald Trump said, hey, listen, I want you to prove this dossier false, especially this salacious nonsense. And he acts like that is a puzzling question, because even if there's 1% that my wife thinks that could be true, I don't want her to believe that. It seems that Trump's reaction is normal.
Look, here's a simple test where Rod Rosenstein is frankly cheating the whole country. There are three memos that Comey wrote after he saw Donald Trump. All three memos are still sitting at Justice because Rosenstein will not release them. Now, if we have to read the whole book, we should wait and see what are these three memos? Why aren't they releasing them? And I'm told that actually the memos totally exonerate Donald Trump and undercut all of the posturing that we're getting out of Comey.
Yeah. I think we have 1.2 million documents that we're waiting for. We also have the IG report that we're waiting for and so much more. Mr. Speaker, we always appreciate your insight. Thank you. You break it down as simply as anyone could ever ask for. 800-941-SEAN, our number. When we come back, Sarah Carter weighs into today's news. Greg Jarrett, David Schoen. Also, yeah, Trump has pardoned Scooter Libby, the former chief of staff of the former vice president, Dick Cheney. Glad to hear it. He never should have been pardoned a long time ago, in my opinion. Quick break, right back. We'll continue.
This isn't the first division in my lifetime. I remember the Nixon administration. I remember Watergate. We have a president now who is under investigation. Some people are calling for his impeachment. I don't actually think that's that great of an idea, because I think that if Donald Trump is to leave office, it should be through political means, not necessarily through judicial.
Who needs TV Guide when they have POTUS? We'll show you exactly what President Trump was promoting through his Twitter page last night. It was one of his stooges doing a show that really helps the president. It's incredible. It's staggering.
Bob Mueller, whatever you want to say about him, this is not taking a position on his investigation. He is a man who's served this country for his entire life. So to call him the head of a crime family, that's new territory.
It's beneath contempt. Sean Hannity is a desperate, desperate man, desperately defending a desperate, desperate president.
Phil, if I can, I want to get your reaction to Sean Hannity calling Robert Mueller a crime boss.
I spent 4.5 years by Robert Mueller. This is a storied prosecutor, one of the most legendary FBI directors. So you got that dirtbag telling me that one of the most storied FBI directors ever is a crime boss? You put them side by side and you tell me what we got here, John. Facts or facts? Robert Mueller's an American legend. The president is a dirtbag. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I'm so pissed off.
One of President Trump's tweets tonight, he said, big show on Sean Hannity at 9 o'clock on Fox. Well, if you watched Hannity, you would see this, the show hitting James Comey and highlighting what Hannity calls the Mueller crime family. This is a message the president wants.
Mr. Free, over 65 people have invoked the Fifth Amendment or fled the country in the course of the committee's investigation. Have you ever experienced so many unavailable witnesses in any matter in which you've prosecuted or in which you've been involved?
Actually, I have.
You have? Give me a rundown on that real quickly.
I spent about 16 years doing organized crime cases in New York City, and many people were frequently unavailable.
All right, there's the media freakout. You know, the irony of it is I was telling the media, oh, okay, well, if James Comey is going to compare the president of the United States to a mob boss, and then we find out last night that the person he was referring to is Sammy the Bull Gravano, who had killed 19 people. You know, what do you think about mobs? You think about extortion and drug dealing and money laundering and murder. So I said, okay, we'll use the Comey standard. And we'll say, fine, it's the Mueller crime family, the Clinton crime family, and the Comey crime family. Obviously, we are trying to make a point. Obviously, we succeeded. Anyway, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of the program. Getting reaction to Comey's book. It is not shocking how bad this book really is. And now the question is has it put him in legal jeopardy himself beyond the pettiness of it, the mean-spiritedness of it? The amazing thing is how little interaction he even had with Trump, and all he did was regurgitate what he had already said, although I think he made a few missteps. Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst, Sarah Carter, investigative reporter, Fox News contributor, civil rights and criminal defense attorney David Shona with us. Thank you all. Greg, I know you had a chance to glance at this as well. What are your overall impressions?
Yeah, I read the book last night. I had to hand it back, but it's a quick read because it's a bad read. Short, it's poorly written. What struck me is that the publisher must have been begging Comey, give me something. Here's the problem. Comey really never had much interaction with Trump. Yeah, he had dinner one night with him and a couple of private conversations with him. So you could feel, you know, Comey straining to try to inflate those conversations to make them, you know, important or meaningful, and they're not. And the rest of the book is really just a love letter from Comey to himself. I'm, you know, the greatest person in the world. I'm so smart. I'm superior to you. I'm the equivalent of the Vicar of Christ. I mean, it goes on and on and on. It's actually nauseating. Yeah. But in terms of substance, there's nothing there.
I got no substance out of this so far, Sarah Carter. And I, you know, as I look through it, the amount of lies that we know were told here. Remember, Democrats hated him more than Republicans for a long time. He lied about himself never leaking because we know he did leak. You know, he says he's wrongfully fired, but the president has the right to fire. He admitted such. He says he's not political, but he had full confidence that Hillary was going to win and wanted to make sure she was a legitimate president, and therefore brought up the Anthony Weiner emails, which we now know they had a month before, but they were trying not to get out. And I'm just wondering here, what are the other big takeaways you get from this?
I think the biggest takeaway, Sean, that I got out of this, and I have not read the book yet. I don't have access to the book yet. I want to be very clear. This is based on excerpts that ABC has put out there and others, and I'm sure Greg would maybe want to chime in on this, or David. But one of the biggest things was the fact that he failed and did not purposefully tell the president when he briefed him on the dossier that it was paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee. I found that actually kind of stunning. I mean, if you're going to brief someone on a dossier that you yourself said is unverified and fallacious, you would think that the most important point that you would want to brief them on is the fact that it was paid for by political opponents, right? And Comey himself admits and very weakly discusses his reasoning behind this, admits that he didn't even tell President-elect Trump at that point, he was president-elect, about that. And when asked why, he basically just kind of let it go. I didn't think it was important. Well, you didn't think that was important? That's like one of the most significant things. Imagine if that had happened the other way around. Imagine if they were briefing Hillary Clinton and it was the other way around on a dossier that was unverified, that had salacious comments about her in their false comments, and never once decided to tell her that it was being paid for by the Trump campaign. Could you imagine what would happen on the Democratic side if it was the other way around? So I found that to be a big takeaway for me. I look forward to reading his book and having more takeaways like that.
And also, David Schoen, he only said it was salacious and unverified, didn't tell the president where the information came from, that it was bought and paid for, but the FISA warrant 3 months earlier to spy on an opposition party candidate. Now, the FBI had the FISA laws are clear that they must corroborate and verify what they bring before a FISA judge in a warrant. And similarly, they didn't do that, nor did they follow FBI protocols, and it was the bulk of information used to get that FISA warrant to spy on a Trump campaign associate just before the campaign. 3 months later, he's saying something entirely different to the president. So he either lied then or they lied to the FISA judges. Which is it?
Hard to imagine something more dangerous in our judicial system. What, there's a reason there's a heightened standard before the FISA court, and it's obvious to everyone. And I don't know why everyone wouldn't be incredibly troubled by this. I'm afraid, though, you know, with all the talk about the book, by the way, I didn't read it. I can't get past the self-aggrandizing title, Higher Loyalty. Not for me, but might read it for the same reasons I read some other junk. But I'm afraid people are going to forget about the very troubling conflict between the stories told by Mr. Comey and Mr. McCabe. You know, that was front and center for a bit, and I'm afraid the book tour, people trying to raise the $850 for the tickets to see Mr. Comey and his tour, are going to sidetrack things from the real issues. That's why I'm glad Sarah, by the way, brought it back now to what the real issues are in this, as you always do, Mr. Hannity.
Let me go to Greg. Do you see any legal jeopardy as Comey now goes forward in all of this?
Oh, I absolutely do. He violated the, in my judgment, the abuse of power statute in, you know, filing the FISA warrant. Also, that's perjury. He stole government documents, including classified information, which is a violation of the law. And he may have obstructed justice. It appears to me he did in clearing Hillary Clinton. So, you know, things are going to end badly for James Comey. And I hope he makes a load of money off his book and his tour, because he's going to need it for his criminal defense.
What do you make of the absolute the pettiness of this? Chris Wallace had a comment. Like, he couldn't believe the bitchiness in it all. His words, not mine. But I mean, Comey talking about the size of the president's hands and speculating if he uses a tanning bed. And I mean,
it was silly. As I read it, it was everything I could do not to vomit in the barf bag next to me. You know, I mean, it was so over the top. I don't actually think he wrote this book. I think they must have hired, you know, some novelist to try to, you know, trump it up, because it's totally inflated. The fact of the matter is, he had very little contact and interaction with the president, and so the fact that, you know, he tried to, you know, the P tape and the Sammy the Bull reference, I mean, these were all things that were conjured out of thin air by somebody else to make it.
But here's a question, and let me throw this aside. But he still to this day doesn't know whether or not the allegations in the dossier are true. He says that in the interview. Now, but here's the point. That dossier was the bulk of the information used to get a FISA warrant, and he still to this day can't say if it's true. So that means that means the FISA law wasn't followed and FBI protocols weren't followed.
Well, that's exactly on point, Sean. And that's, you would have thought, like in this book, he would have had some big revelation, and he didn't. In fact, it just reaffirms the fact that nothing has changed here, that this was based on falsified information. And by the way, comparing him to the president of the United States to a mob boss that has done killings is incredible. Now, if you're going to talk about comparing situations to organized crime, just go back to that Louis Free, the hearing in 1997, where Louis Free was talking about how difficult it was for both the FBI and for Congress to get anybody to talk about the Clintons. I mean, they had, at that point in time, by the time Louis Free was questioning them on foreign campaign, illegal foreign campaign finance from China, which they knew the Democratic National Committee had moved some money in from the Chinese for the campaign, over 65 people had either fled the country or pled the fifth. They weren't even going to answer any questions. And then he compared that to organized crime, you know, during the hearing. That's a real reason. I mean, he's trying to compare a president of the United States with a crime boss saying that this is how he acts. No, this is completely false on its nature. He has no facts. It's just his own feelings, and that's how he feels. And apparently he felt very hurt by the fact that he was fired, but the president had all the authority to fire him. And let's remember,
that's the whole thing.
The Democrats didn't want him.
And as we continue with attorney David Schoen is with us, Greg Jarrett is with us, Sarah Carter is with us. The president today, David, gave a full pardon to Scooter Libby. Now, what's interesting about this is, well, that was the last big special prosecutor we have. And that was, quote, obstruction of justice because they couldn't get him on the underlying crime. And as it related to the Valerie Plame case, what's so interesting is Patrick Fitzgerald, who was the special counsel there, prosecutor there, he, if you remember, on day one, found out who had leaked information about Valerie Plame, and it ended up being Richard Armitage. But he kept going and going, and look where we ended up there.
He was a good man, and his life was ruined. I don't know that the president needed this, which the pushback he's going to get from this right now with everything else that's going on. But I want to just get back to one other point you made. You said earlier, Mr. Hannity, that Mr. Comey still doesn't know about the veracity of the warrant. The warrant application and all that. Birds of a feather. This is a pattern with all of these folks. You've talked before about Andrew Weissman. I couldn't begin to tell you the number of warrants for surveillance and searches and seizures that afterwards turned out to be based on completely false information on people who were known liars and represented as otherwise to the court. This is a pattern, longstanding pattern. And as for the point that Mr. Comey ought to be careful, he's going to be prosecuted. The question is, who's going to prosecute? The Justice Department right now seems missing in action. Hopefully Michael Horowitz is hard at work. But who's going to bring the prosecutions? Everything seems one-sided now.
Yeah, well, it certainly seems one-sided because all the issues we bring, we can't even get the materials. And, Sarah, that's the whole point. I mean, you have Bob Goodlatte, House Judiciary. He's requesting 1.2 million documents. We're still waiting for the Inspector General report on the Hillary email server scandal. It's like, how long does all of this take when he's got 500 people working for him?
Yeah, it's enormously frustrating, and for, you know, especially for members of Congress who are, and their investigators who are continually trying to get this information and having to battle every single day the exhaustion of having to battle the DOJ and the FBI in order to get these documents. You know, Judicial Watch is doing the same. They've requested these documents over and over again, particularly the text messages and communications of former Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, who's now facing possible indictment and criminal charges for lying four times and under oath. Then you go back and look at everything that happened during the Hillary Clinton investigation and how there was enormous double standards in that investigation, and they're investigating that as well. So this is why it's taking so much time, because people are fighting tooth and nail inside the FBI and inside the DOJ not to give up these documents.
Was there any choice there? Why, if this was salacious, and this particular part of the dossier unverified, still unverified, by the way?
Yes. So far as when I got fired, it was unverified.
Did you tell him that the Steele dossier had been financed by his political opponents?
No, I didn't even think I used the term Steele dossier. I just talked about additional material.
Did he have a right to know that?
That had been financed by his political opponents? I don't know the answer to that. It wasn't necessary for my goal, which was to alert him that we had this information.
Democrats have been very critical of James Comey, and many of us did call for his resignation.
Well, I was appalled by what Director Comey did.
Comey acted in an outrageous way.
He made a mistake. Maybe he's not in the right job.
Howard Dean, former Democratic candidate for president, says, quote, he may have destroyed the credibility of the FBI forever.
This was a very serious error in judgment.
The president ought to fire Comey immediately, and he ought to initiate an investigation.
What he did was unprecedented and outrageous, damaged the institution of law enforcement in this country.
The lowest moment in the history of the FBI.
I found it hard to believe that Comey, who I thought had some degree of integrity, would do this.
All I can tell you is the FBI director has no credibility. That's it.
All right, that's the Democrats trashing Comey. Oh, but now they love Comey. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. Your call's at the bottom of the hour. And, of course, oh, why bother telling the president that Hillary was the one that paid for the phony Russian dossier? Unbelievable. All right, joining us now, it's always good to have back on the program, Danielle McLaughlin, attorney, constitutional expert, wrote the Federalist Society, Jonathan Gillum, author of the book Sheep No More. Danielle, let's start with you. It's not pertinent to tell the FISA court or the president-elect 3 months later that the dossier was Hillary bought and paid for. And, of course, they don't even know to this day whether or not the information in the dossier is true. And we believe it all not to be true.
Hi, Sean. Great to be here. You know, one thing I will say is that there was a footnote in the FISA application that indicated that a person who was a political opponent of the president had funded the dossier. Number two, what Comey said was at the time when he briefed the president on a very sort of embarrassing and delicate issue, his purpose was not to talk about the source, but rather the fact that this information was out there and circulating. And I think he wanted to let the president know that. I think that was real and rational.
Yeah. And what's your take, Jonathan Gillum?
You know, Sean, I've been watching Comey, as all of us have, for quite a while now, and I'm not surprised by anything that this guy has done. I think the fact that he is so quickly writing a book and the childish language that has been put out so far that's in this book is ridiculous. But, you know, I saw on FoxNews.com they're saying that he gives some possible insight into what Loretta Lynch did. Well, it's the same thing with all this stuff. You know, he is not, like many of the Supreme Court justices and people at the DOJ, he is not a neutral participant in law enforcement. I don't think he was probably like that as an attorney, and he's definitely not like that here. And what we're seeing is somebody who is completely unqualified to do the job to lead the FBI. He was not a trained investigator. He was an attorney, and he doesn't understand that an investigation should be led by the evidence. And if the evidence is manufactured, the investigation is no good. But yet, when you take the stuff that was said by Loretta Lynch on the tarmac, which he says if it had been known by the public, it would have caused real problems. All these things are what investigators look at as no-goes. They see that, it stops. And then they start looking at the reality of where now this new evidence is leading, which was never done. It was just kind of looked over. A political opponent paid for the dossier. We'll just look past that. It's very, very strange and very leftist, in my opinion.
You know, I just look at all of this, and how is it possible, Danielle, that you're going to use a political document of a foreign national that uses Russian sources? Nobody even knows who they really are. And it's bought and paid for by one campaign, then used to get a FISA warrant on another campaign. And I'm trying to understand that Comey allowed all of that to happen, and then still 3 months later wouldn't tell the president what had happened here or that who had paid for it here. Isn't that lying to a judge if you withhold that kind of information? And isn't it part of the FISA law that you're supposed to verify what's presented before a FISA judge? And isn't it FBI protocol to do such?
Look, I understand supporters of the president, people who voted for the president, feel sick about the idea that a political opposition document was used in a FISA warrant. But what I will say is the document that started this all was not the dossier. It was information from an ally, from a Five Eyes ally. It was an Australian diplomat who talked to Papadopoulos, you know, months in 2016. Papadopoulos said Russia has damaging emails on Hillary Clinton. The diplomat didn't do anything until WikiLeaks started publishing John Podesta's emails. And Australia got in touch with our law enforcement and said, look, this is what we heard. You probably need to look into this. Yes, the dossier was part and parcel of these FISA applications. It wasn't the only thing. I understand it feels wrong that political opposition research was used, but it was made clear to the judge.
But that's no. It was not made clear to the FISA judge. A footnote doesn't make clear that this was bought and paid for by the opposition party. It may have been tainted note, does not make that clear. And it was purposely withheld to the FISA court. Now, also, they never verified it. James Comey says in this interview, he to this day doesn't even know, has no idea whether or not what was in the dossier is true. But he did know it was presented before the FISA judge. Do you go before a judge and present evidence that you don't corroborate from a foreign national citing Russian sources about, you know, outlandish conduct in this case, of a presidential candidate, and you don't tell the judge, oh, we didn't verify that. When you present it, it's going to be assumed it's true.
You would never make a representation to a court that you were putting something in front of a judge that was verified when it was not. You would never put something in front of a court that was based on, you know, salacious rumors without actually telling the judge that. And then the judge makes their own decision, ultimately. I know people are upset about Pfizer. I know people are upset about the raid on Michael Cohen. But ultimately, these were judges that made these decisions. And I have to believe that they were informed. I know there was a footnote.
How could
judge.
You have to believe, but you're not following what happened here. We know it wasn't corroborated, Jonathan, and we know it wasn't verified. We know FBI protocols were not followed, laws were not followed, and they presented it to the judge anyway. And that, to quote the Grassley Graham memo, it was the bulk of information. And to quote Andrew McCabe, who said without any dossier, we wouldn't have even applied for a Pfizer warrant.
Right. You know, Sean, here's all this stuff that you're saying is spot on. But here's the thing that I want Danielle and the rest of the listeners to grasp is that when people say on TV or on the radio and they say, well, this is what happened or that is what happened, you don't really actually know if that's what happened. That's what we're being told happened. And what I'm starting to see, you know, Mark Zuckerberg in front of Congress the other day was a perfect example of what's happening in this investigation. Perception is reality. And if people perceive it, that's all they're worried about. Let's have the country perceive that Comey was in the right or that Comey was doing this. And the same thing with Zuckerberg and these people. Why they try to make you perceive that selling your information is the big problem. The reality is all of these social media platforms conspiring together to limit conservatives, that's the big problem. And the same thing here. The reality is not what we're being told. Just because somebody reports it doesn't mean that it's true. And when we look at
the summary report today by the inspector general, it came out just before the show today, you know, the summary of findings, the misconduct, this misconduct report addresses the accuracy of statements made by then FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe of the FBI's Inspection Division and the Department of Justice Office of Inspector General concerning the disclosure of certain law enforcement sensitive information to a specific reporter, this particular case from the Wall Street Journal, and it goes on from there. But it goes on and talks at length about the misconduct that has taken place here. And in addition to addressing whether McCabe lacked candor, the Office of Inspector General addressed whether any FBI Department of Justice policies were violated. So they, you know, again, we're going through this as we speak here. We'll have more on this tonight. But the Clinton email investigation, the Clinton Foundation investigation, Comey refuses to confirm the existence of the Clinton Foundation investigation and other investigations.
Sean, what you're doing is looking at the totality of the circumstances. That's different than just listening to reports and saying, oh, okay, well, they reported this or they reported that. When you look at the totality of the circumstances, which is what you all are doing, you're saying, okay, they're saying this, but let's look at everything else and let's let that guide us. That's why your reports, Catherine Herridge's reports, are, I believe, unbiased, whether people believe it there or not, because you all are focusing on the truth. You're letting the investigation lead you. And that is not what the media, by and large, does. And that is not the way that they present information, the Comeys, the Attorney General Lynch's, these types of people. They give you a perception. They don't give you the truth. And when you start looking at the totality of the circumstances, it never matches up to what these senior executive service people who have no overwatch are telling the American public.
And how do you respond to that, Danielle?
I can speak for myself. And your point is well taken that we have media, we have bias in media, you know, across the ideological spectrum. I speak about what my views are on the FBI investigation and the way that the Department of Justice conducts itself based on my own experience being up against them as a defense attorney. So I wasn't in the room when the judge approved that Pfizer warrant, but my experience of working with Department of Justice, working against Department of Justice.
I know, but the point is you're assuming that things work out the right way, and we're assuming that they don't work out the right way.
Right, right. So maybe you're on one end, I'm on the other, maybe things are somewhere in the middle. But I also want to explain why that matters, because none of this works unless people behave ethically. Nothing that I do as an attorney means anything if I will not follow the ethical obligations that I have. And we will probably get to this, but this is one of the reasons that Michael Cohen is under the spotlight, and this notion of the warrant and the raid and the extent to which the SDNY investigation can look into attorney-client privileged communication. Like, lawyers are bound by really strong rules, and if you break them, there are consequences. But I will say,
we got to take a break here. Well, more at the bottom of the hour on this report, investigation of the certain allegations relating the former FBI deputy director from the Office of Inspector General. Fascinating timing on all of this. As we continue, your calls at the bottom of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, as we continue with Jonathan Gillum and Danielle McLaughlin. We found that in conversation with then-Director Comey, shortly after the Wall Street Journal article was published and leaked, in other words, McCabe lacked candor when he told Comey or made statements that led Comey to believe that McCabe had not authorized the disclosure and did not know who did. Now, I think this is only the beginning of the troubles of those people within the deep state that have been involved in activities that we all know, Jonathan Gillum, they shouldn't have been involved in. And that includes Comey himself, who's now coming out with this big book of his and the problems with the truth that he's had in the past about leaking and other issues.
Yeah, John, I think at least from my perspective and other former agents that I've talked to, I think we pretty much have nailed down the precise location that this deep state exists, at least the people who are setting things in motion. And that's the senior executive service. You can call it a branch of the government. The reality is it's a different branch of the Civil Service Act, and these people are paid at a much higher rate. They basically have little to no overwatch except from the political appointees. And even then, they're able to do things because they're at the top of these agencies. When you talk about the Comeys, the McCabes, when you talk about the Brennans and all these people from the CIA or Powers that was in the State Department, and then when it, for some reason, was over in the DOD who was unmasking. When you look at all these people, they're all a part of the senior executive service of this country's agencies, and they have no overwatch. So they can do basically whatever they want, and if they have a group of conspirators, they can work together, and there is no check. And they can work across agency boundaries. They can work and employ agents who have no idea what's going on to carry out investigations that they can then cripple if they need to. And I think there's plenty of evidence showing that. And I would just say, when before we went to break, one thing that Daniel was saying, you know, I know it's good to look at your experience and who you've worked with in the DOJ. I do the same thing myself with the FBI and the DOJ. But we're not talking about people that you've worked with here. We're talking about people that are above the honest agents, above the honest attorneys, if that actually does exist besides yourself, Daniel. And it is a completely different world, completely different.
Daniel?
You know, this is my question, my issue with the deep state. Where was the deep state in the George W. Bush administration? Where was the deep state in the Bill Clinton administration? Where was the deep state in the Obama administration?
I can answer that for you.
Yeah, no, please, sir.
They were put in place during the Clinton administration. These are people that rose to the ranks. They weren't at a rank when they were in the George Bush era. They were still getting to rank. And by the time he was gone, they were already at senior executive levels. All it takes is one or two people to be put in the top to then pull people up, and that's what's happened. Through the Bush era, he never fired anybody in these areas. He didn't come in and clean house, nor did Trump, and that's the problem, is that those people are still there.
Yeah, all right, thank
you
both. We got to run. Anyway, this is a big deal. We have not only the insight to the Office of Inspector General, Department of Justice, the allegations related to former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe and his firing, and also the new insights that we're dealing with as it relates to the Comey book. We'll get to your calls on the other side of this. I know a lot of news to deal with in one day. 800-941-SEAN is our number. Quick break, right back. We'll continue. A lot of news time. We'll be able to break this down more, as obviously this was breaking as we were coming on the air here today, but the conclusion of the Office of Inspector General at the Department of Justice of these allegations related to the former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe is they found that the then Deputy Director McCabe lacked candor, including under oath on multiple occasions in connection with describing his role in connection with a disclosure to the Wall Street Journal, and that this conduct violated the FBI offenses codes 2.56, and concluded that McCabe's disclosure of the existence of an ongoing investigation in the manner described in this report violated the FBI's department media policy and constituted misconduct. The OIG is issuing this report to the FBI for such action as it deems appropriate, which we already know, in fact, happened. But they go into a lot of deep analysis, just trying to sum it up here, as it relates to the lack of candor with the then director, Comey. And it specifically goes on that, you know, as it relates to October 31st, 2016, discussed in the October 30th, 2016 Wall Street Journal article, Comey and McCabe give very different, conflicting accounts of the conversation. Comey said McCabe definitely did not tell Comey that he authorized the disclosure. To the contrary, Comey tells the OIG that, in fact, McCabe led him to believe in form and fashion that McCabe did not authorize the disclosure about information as it relates to the Wall Street Journal. And Comey described how McCabe gave Comey the impression that McCabe had, in fact, not authorized the disclosure, but he did. You know, it's all a good start. I mean, I guess, but it's just taking forever because that's only one person, one small piece of this, and why he was in particular fired. Now, as it relates to the actual email investigation and what ended up being an exoneration before even an investigation, that's a whole different part that they'll be releasing at some point in the future when we don't know, but hopefully sooner rather than later. All right, let's get to our busy phones as we say hi to Derek is in Arizona. Derek, hi, how are you? Glad you called.
75 degrees, pretty chilly today, Sean.
75 degrees, pretty chilly. You know, don't take it the wrong way. I know it's going to sound very offensive to you. That's so obnoxious to say that to people. But we're going to have 70 degrees here tomorrow, so I don't even want to hear it anymore. We're back to normal, I think. I hope. I pray.
Hey, listen, I was calling because, you know, a lot of this, a big chunk of this can be attributed to Sessions. And it's blatantly obvious that this, that they have some dirt on this guy, that he is willing to actually grow a spine and do something. What kind of dirt could they possibly have on this guy? Because it's got to be pretty massive. I think it's ridiculous. And I think all of Congress, I think there's a great idea. NASCAR drivers, they have their sponsors on their car and all over their vests every time they're out to drive Sunday. We should have each Congress member wear a vest of who their sponsors are and who we're actually fighting against.
You know, it almost makes you think that we really do need just, you know, public financing of campaigns. Limited amount of money, here you go, and that's it. You put in anything you want to pay on your own. Short of that, you're not beholden to anybody, because you're right, it's obnoxious.
It's ridiculous. And I just think as this, all of this stuff, Trump coming, and I'm really happy that Trump's in office to expose the corruption that's going on, and the freaking out is just, it solidifies all of the corruption that's going on, and they don't want it to change, and they're crying and fighting tooth and nail to stop it from happening. And I'm thankful that we can at least see what's going on.
I appreciate the call, Derek. It's going to be a hell of a ride here in the next few weeks, I'll tell you that. Melissa is in Arizona. Hi, Melissa. How are you? Are you going to brag about the temperatures too?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when it's 120 degrees and you can't even, you know, get one breath of air in July, then you can call in, okay?
Oh, well, I'm a native here, so I'm used to it.
Oh, I don't know. I've been out there in 120 degrees. You can fry an egg on the sidewalk. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but you know, the funny thing is they still keep moving here. Everybody comes on.
They do.
Yes, they do.
So what's on your mind today, Melissa?
Right. Yeah. Well, my question is, and I've been wondering about this, I don't know if you brought it up, but was Comey, Rosenstein, and the other bad actors collaborating before all this took place? Because it doesn't make sense why Rosenstein would send the president a memo advising him to fire Comey.
You know,
and
look,
this started the avalanche.
It's really funny because NBC News reported last night, they go through, and it's really shallow and inaccurate reporting on their part, but that doesn't stop them from doing and saying stupid things. They were saying about, they actually reported that Mueller, you know, had found four findings on Donald Trump of obstruction. Number one was the intent to fire Mueller. And I'm like, well, what are we going to, we're going to charge people for the, for what they think at any given moment, not what they do. It's absurd on the surface, but that's what NBC reported. You know, another was the role in crafting a public statement. All right, I don't know as it related to Don Jr. in the Trump Tower meeting. The third was talk of pardoning witnesses who might testify against him. Okay, talk is talk. Doing is another thing. And on top of that, the power of the pardon is absolute. Or pressuring the attorney general to recuse himself. Okay, not to recuse himself. Well, it was too late. The attorney general did that on his own.
Well, I think they were collaborating before all of this just to start the avalanche. Comey took one for the team, said, you're going to be fired. This is what's going to happen. Boom, 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 boom. And there it went.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to see. Yeah. At some point, there's going to be a tipping point here. I think that the whole purpose has been and continues to be they want to goad the president. They want to get him into a position where he's just going to say enough is enough. This isn't fair. It's never been fair. There's never been any collusion. The mandate has literally been shattered. And you know what? This just isn't even good for the country. And use the power as the president that he has, Article 2, et cetera. That's what who knows if we're going there.
Correct. And honestly, as a voter, and I can speak for a lot of the other voters that support President Trump, we don't care what he has done or what he does in his personal life. We don't care.
Most Americans are too busy to care what anybody does in their personal life, to be really blunt about it.
As long as he didn't hang around with terrorists like Obama did. Obama was friends with terrorists.
Well, Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, yeah, he started his career in their house, and then he described them as some people in the neighborhood, George. All right. Anyway, Melissa, you have a great weekend. We appreciate you being with us. Scott in Evans, Colorado. Hey, Scott, how are you? Glad you called.
Well, it's 39 degrees in the oil patch here in northern Colorado.
Are you working
jealous.
In the oil patches today?
Yes, sir.
Oh, good for you. I hope you're making a lot of money. Everybody I know that works in the oil business, whatever job they do pretty well.
We work hard and we're well rewarded. And I DVR all of your shows, your TV shows, and I listen to you when I can here in the patch on the radio. And that Comey crime family, actually I call it the DC crime family, that was the best show you have ever done. And I watch your shows for years.
Well, I appreciate it. So I started with this idea earlier in the morning, and I'm kind of flipping it around with my producers, and I'm just messing with the idea, and I'm like, wait a minute, because all day that day, it was up on Drudge, Comey compares Trump to mob boss. And I'm thinking, really, we're going to compare him to murderers and drug dealers and the worst dregs? I never wanted this for my son, Don Jr. So it came about, and I said, okay, we'll use the Comey standards. Did you hear the liberal freak out over it?
You know, it was beautiful, and not just that, the whole show, your guests. But I love how
you
tied it together like a police officer would with all those pointing here and there. Man, what a show. I'm going to keep that DPR forever.
Well, I think we're going to be having a lot more of those kinds of shows. Maybe I'll just keep the example up on the screen a little longer so that the rest of the media can bubble and fizz like Alka-Seltzer and water. By the way, I knew they would take the bait. I knew they'd see it and they wouldn't even think that, maybe he's doing this for a reason because... And now we know he took it a step further by comparing the president to Sammy the Bull Gravano, who killed 19 people. All right, we've got all the breaking news tonight. The Inspector General report is out. Comey now caught in a number of lies. And what is the secret information he has on Loretta Lynch? Also, Comey still doesn't know if the dossier is true, but yet it was used to get a FISA warrant to spy on a Trump campaign associate. Joe DeGeneva, Victoria Tunsing, Mercedes Schlapp, Sarah Carter tonight, Sebastian Gorka, Sally Cohn. All happening tonight, 9 Eastern, Hannity on Fox. Have a great weekend. We'll see you tonight back here Monday.